highlighting the needs of women and girls here on the First Coast. Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and our WJCT app. And just ahead, a look ahead to this week's See the Girl Summit in Jacksonville. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, a conversation with attorney Kelly Mathis on his overturned conviction in that notorious Allied Veterans of the World case. Plus, Chris Thomas from local favorite The Chris Thomas Band on the band's new CD release. Get ready to listen to some great music later in the hour. All of that ahead and more. But first this morning, it's set to be a thought-provoking 2 days in Jacksonville as the upcoming See the Girls Summit will address the needs of Florida's girls and young women. On the agenda, everything from sex trafficking to violence against women and girls and how to engage more men to stop it. And a whole lot more. Here with a preview, we're pleased to welcome Dr. LaWanda Rivora. She's a national expert, advocate, author, and researcher on issues specific to girls and women and the founding president and CEO of the Dolores Barr Weaver Policy Center. Dr. Rivora, good morning.
Good morning.
Also with us, Roy Miller. He's president of the Tallahassee-based Children's Campaign. Roy Miller, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And as we talk about the See the Girl Summit and issues of sex trafficking, violence against women and girls, we want your calls. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet us, or weigh in on our Facebook page. And LaWanda Rivora, let's begin with you. This is kicking off tomorrow at the downtown Jesse Ball DuPont Center. Good news for you, most of your summit workshops are at capacity, so there's a lot of interest in this.
That's right. We're very excited that we have reached maximum registration, and so many people are interested in coming and learning about what they can do to shift the world for girls.
And since so many listeners won't be able to attend, I'm pleased to be able to give you some time to talk about these issues. This is your life's work, and it's certainly very timely. Let's talk about the purpose of the See the Girl Summit.
The purpose of the See the Girl Summit is to bring together thought leaders with advocates, with practitioners, researchers, to come together in our community and to learn how we can shift how girls are treated. And this year, we're particularly focusing on violence against women and bringing thought leaders who can talk about how to engage men in the movement, because we see this very much as a human rights movement. We're talking about advocacy around sex trafficking and the really innovative things that are happening here in the state of Florida, and also the most cutting-edge research.
What are some of the innovative leaps forward, Roy, that we're seeing here in Florida when it comes to how the justice system in particular handles girls and women, particularly those that fall into the system because they've been assaulted or trafficked?
The landscape has improved significantly just in the last couple of years. We've been able to move substantive legislation that corrects a lot of the ills, or if it doesn't absolutely correct it, takes us right down the path towards correction. So things like expunging the records of kids who do stupid things.
Boys and girls.
Boys and girls.
Yeah.
But they were especially harsh on girls because when you look at the long-term impact, they tend to affect the professions that girls and women go into more than the professions that boys go into.
Like how? How so?
Well, things like nursing and teaching, you know, childcare. So when we brought these issues forward, we made sure that we had stories of girls that were negatively impacted in their career pursuits because of those records. So we're going, and we're also changing into going after the tougher situations that girls are exposed to, not just the front end. I mean, we're sort of winning on the front end of the juvenile justice system. We're reducing arrests. We're getting those records expunged. But what about those girls that are in the deeper end of the system that are still disproportionately being thrust into those deep end residential programs, and the girls that are actually trafficked, who suffer all that trauma? We're actually going deeper to into those dark spaces and affecting change.
And it's difficult to have these conversations, LaWanda Rivora, and that is why I think you named this summit See the Girl. You want to bring this out into the light. These are girls whose stories can be very difficult to hear sometimes.
Absolutely. I think that sometimes it's easier to turn away than to recognize the violence and the victimization and the sexual assault and the trafficking that's happening to a very vulnerable population of girls and young women right here in our community. And I would say that's also why I'm very excited about the upcoming launch of the Open Door Statewide Service Network that we've been able to successfully get support in the Florida legislature last year, and that will be a survivor-led network to provide real-time interventions with victims of trafficking. But these are uncomfortable topics to talk about, and for many, if it's not impacting your family, it's easy to blame the victims as opposed to really coming together as a community and making changes.
And we'll go to your calls about this week's See the Girl Summit in downtown Jacksonville in just a moment. The number is 549-2937. And let me ask you both, as we prepare for tonight's final presidential debate, certainly in this race between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, the country has been having an intense conversation about misogynism, about what consent means, about what assault really is. And so this is also something that is part of our national political conversation this year. Roy Miller.
It is. And it's gotten people to pay attention. Now, everybody's blood pressure is pretty up about it. And after the election, that blood pressure will go down some, but it's going to be at a higher level than it started. And that's how progress is made. We hit those peaks, and then it calms down a little bit. And in that calm period is when real effective policy change can occur.
And that is the goal of the Dolores Barweaver Policy Center, Dr. Rivora, is changing the state's policies. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of the progress you've made in the last few years?
Well, we are very excited about the progress that we've made in partnership with the Children's Campaign. Our community, when we opened, had the highest rate of incarceration of young girls than anywhere else in the state of Florida. In fact, we were locking up more girls than Miami, Tampa, and Fort Lauderdale combined. And what we are proud of is that we have reduced the incarceration rate in Duval County by 67% over the last 3 years. And that has come through some policy shifts and some practice shifts in our community.
In a nutshell, I know that the work you've done is quite complex, but in a nutshell, has it been a matter of raising awareness about the reasons why girls act out, that so often it is the result of sexual abuse or trauma of some kind?
I think it's a combination of many things, and it certainly is raising awareness, but it's also engaging citizens in this fight for reform. And our citizens are stepping up. They are making this a priority in this community, and they're investing in girls.
And Roy Miller, you're president of the Children's Campaign, which is based in Tallahassee. That is what your organization is all about, is advocating for the most vulnerable children in Florida and protecting them from, as you said, the long-term impacts of being caught up in the criminal justice system.
Right. We see ourselves as bridge builders, to be honest with you. And it's the bridge between the people on the front lines who are providing social services and the kids who need those services, and the policymakers in Tallahassee whose decisions really impact everything that anybody can do or should do in a community. And so we like to see ourselves as bridging the social science with the political science. And without both working together, progress is not as fast as it could be.
And the See the Girls Summit, which is set for tomorrow and Friday in Jacksonville, is sold out, which shows you how timely and important this topic is for the First Coast. But we are having a virtual See the Girls Summit right now as we take your calls. What are your thoughts and questions about this? It's 549-2937. Join the conversation right now. We're going to begin with Dave in Nassau County. Hi, Dave. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
What I was going to suggest is that maybe it's time we take a good, honest look at the role of religion, especially the monotheistic traditions, in their direct link to misogyny and the idea that women should be treated by men as property, and the whole idea of that stems great respect to the more traditional view of religion. I mean, there's the abuse in the Catholic Church, the abuse of women in the Islamic world. There's a lot of issues that you can link religion and abuse of women. So, thank you.
All right, Dave. Thanks for the call. Dr. Rivora, what's your opinion about that religion as relates to just patriarchy and misogyny generally in this society and around the world?
I think that there are multiple things that we have to look at, and certainly religiosity is one of those. But we live in a country where 1 out of 5 women will be sexually assaulted during her lifetime. And when we look at sexual abuse, 1 out of 4 girls will be sexually abused before she reaches her 18th birthday. And when in Florida, the most recent report around sex trafficking, 93% of the victims are female. So I think it certainly is these arcane views around women and girls that's the intersection of many things, from religion to patriarchy to policies and practices that continue to exclude women from power positions as well as the conversation around change.
Now, I'm interested to hear a little bit more about some of these workshops you'll be conducting, because on the agenda is how to engage more men in changing this culture of violence against women. How do you bring more men into this conversation without putting guys on the defensive, frankly, especially men who feel that they are not that type of guy and they don't want to be categorized that way? How do you change the conversation to involve men?
It's one of the reasons that we are bringing Russ Funk to our community, and he does what's called men's work, and it's engaging men and boys in the movement to prevent violence against women. And it's a conversation, and he actually is sparked a global movement to teach men how to engage without taking over the movement. And it's about partnering with women. And that, I think, is part of the nuance and the critical part of this work. And that's the conversation that we want to spark here in our community. And I will say it really came from our leadership council, as well as men on the board of the Policy Center, have encouraged us to spark this dialogue in the community.
And how do we do that?
You have to make it personal.
Roy Miller, yeah.
In our work in Tallahassee, when we're speaking with men on both sides, meaning men that we're trying to influence and also people that we're trying to get to help us influence others, men need to make it personal. It has to be about their family. It has to start at home and then build out. And we find that when we can engage them on a very personal level and help them understand how this affects not only them, but their children and their wives, they're more apt to pay attention to the policy level. If we start off with the big policy conversation, they don't always make the connection. But when we start with them on a personal level, we'll get them up to the bigger conversation. We've been very personal in our conversations with stories. And
tell us one.
Well, I did a radio ad that just had a father talking with his daughter about her juvenile record. And she just kind of put it out there saying, you know, I'm shafted. I, you know, did something stupid, and all these good grades I'm making, I'm not going to, you know, be able to go to the college I want to go to, and I'm not going to be able to go into the career I want. And the father didn't know, like most people don't, that juvenile records didn't go away. And then when he was educated by his daughter, he told her he was going to help her do something about it. And that just unleashed a whole bunch of support from a lot of men, quite frankly. And it was men who led the charge over in Tallahassee. Our sponsors for these bills were male legislators. They totally bought into it.
Sure. And Dr. Rivora, you've spoken on this program before about the phenomenon of records follow young people for many years, and it can be very difficult to overcome that. You've also documented through the Policy Center that the system is more punitive on young girls, you believe, your data shows, because there's this cultural perception that young women should behave in a certain way. And if they act out the way young men might also act out, there's a harsher consequence sometimes that comes from that. Correct?
Absolutely correct. We see that in the research, in the data, and in practice. There is a very narrow window of acceptable behavior, and girls are expected to stay within that confines of that. And so I do think, though, in response to your question about some of the other things that can happen to engage men in this movement, one of the things that Russ talks about is the building skills and for men to model behavior to other men and to boys on what is appropriate treatment, what is appropriate responses when we're hearing put-downs of women or we're hearing jokes about women.
Now, what are both of your thoughts about the fact that Billy Bush has been let go from the Today Show after a videotape emerged of him laughing at comments made by Donald Trump that were deeply offensive? His defense when this all became public was, if I hadn't played along, I would have lost my job. So when you try to engage men and to push back against this type of language and this type of attitude, how do you do that? How do you reach men who might say, look, if I say something, it could impact my life, my profession, my career? What do you think about that?
I think it's just another form of discrimination, and we have to speak out about it. I mean, you know, I've been subjected to that and when I was growing up. And growing up in Florida, I was subjected to racism. I was subjected to a whole bunch of forms of discrimination. And I think we just have to make sure that men get the support and know it's permissible to say, I'm not okay with that. And I don't want to be a part of that conversation.
549-2937 to join us. Wes is in Fernandina Beach. Hello, Wes. Good morning.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just was responding earlier. You guys were talking about changing culture and how do we do that. I just wanted to mention here in Nassau County, we have a wonderful, wonderful non-for-profit called Micah's Place. They actually work with domestic violence situations, women who've been abused and whatnot. But one of the things they do that's really awesome is that they actually go into schools and they educate and they teach. My wife actually teaches the program in the schools, and it's really fascinating to hear her come home excited and listen to how these students have really engaged about topics like privilege and about healthy boundaries and, you know, just being respectful in general and how you do that and what that looks like and when those boundaries are breached. And I just wanted to, you know, mention that, and I would love to hear your comments on it, but I think that that's one way that we could really impact the next generation and really shift culture and turn it like it should be. Thanks.
Thank you, Wes.
I would agree. It's an important way that we have to raise the dialogue early with our children and to teach them what it means to be a responsible bystander. And as Roy was saying, when we're hearing comments or people try to engage us in conversation, if we can teach our children the skills to say, I don't agree and I'm not going to participate in this, it begins to shift the culture at a deep level.
And as we said at the top of the hour, most of your summit workshops are at capacity. But tell us quickly what's on the agenda for tomorrow and Friday at the See the Girl Summit.
Well, we're excited. We'll be talking about the criminalization of Black girls and a strategy session on how we can begin to shift that. Certainly talking about engaging men and boys in the movement to prevent violence against women. We also are looking at the techniques to address the psychological coercion of victims of trafficking. And Roy and I will be doing a workshop around raising our advocacy in political IQ and bridging social science and political science. We'll also be looking at When Love Goes Wrong around interpersonal violence, which really remains an epidemic in our community. And Dr. Barbara Guthrie will be talking about keeping the flame alive and how we can address the disparate treatment of girls, particularly girls of color.
Lots on the table. It's going to be a really impactful 2 days. Let's take one more call about the See the Girl Summit. Mark is along I-95 this morning. Hey, Mark, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. How are you?
Doing well, thanks.
Great. Listen, I just wanted to let your listeners know that, you know, the local law school in town can help juveniles seal and expunge their records. It's hard to do, and there's very few things that can be taken off, but we're trying to make it easier. And your guest is right. We need to lobby Tallahassee to allow more things to be taken off of their record so they don't follow them around and ruin their lives. I mean,
And you're talking about Florida Coastal School of Law, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for that, Mark. I appreciate that. Roy Miller, your final thoughts.
I was very encouraged by that. People are paying attention. I'm actually looking forward to the next couple of years. We've, like I said earlier, we're starting to go into those darker spaces that people haven't reached before in terms of affecting reform for girls and young women. And I'm looking forward to the challenge, and I think looking forward to some more victories.
Thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Lawanda Rivora heads up the Dolores Barr Weaver Policy Center. Roy Miller is president of the Children's Campaign. The See the Girl Summit in downtown Jacksonville tomorrow and Friday is sold out, but go to their website, seethegirl.org, for more information. Much more still ahead. Meanwhile, later, the music of the Swingin' Chris Thomas Band will tell you about their big CD release party in Jacksonville. But up next, local attorney Kelly Mathis, after a long ordeal, gets a fresh start. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Election day is right around the corner, and the candidates are going head-to-head.
I don't believe that Hillary has the stamina.
Why won't he release his tax return?
In debate after debate.
I have a feeling that by the end of this evening, I'm going to be blamed for everything that's ever happened.
Why not?
We don't know what will happen, but NPR's election team will be there with fact-checking and analysis to help you make sense of it all. Listen every day.
Here on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
Welcome back. Well, Jacksonville attorney Kelly Mathis is a free man. Last week, the 5th District Court of Appeal in Daytona Beach threw out a conviction and prison sentence for Mathis, finding that a Sanford judge erred in not allowing him to present evidence about online cafes in Florida. Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi will now have to decide whether to retry Mathis. He was the only person sentenced to prison in that Allied Veterans of the World scandal around Florida's internet cafes. You might recall it originally led to the arrests of some 57 people and also the resignation of former Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll. So what's next for Mathis? He joins us now in studio with some reflections on his ordeal and the Allied Veterans scandal. Kelly Mathis, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Also with us in the studio, your attorney, Mitch Stone. Good to see you.
Good morning, Melissa.
What a long ordeal it's been. Kelly, you were found guilty of one count of racketeering and 51 counts of conducting an illegal lottery in October of 2013 and sentenced to 6 years in prison. This week we learned that that conviction has been thrown out. So in all of this time, you were the only person that was looking at this type of sentence. What are your thoughts this morning?
Well, I am obviously relieved. It has been 3 years since the trial concluded. It took 3 years for the appeal process to work its way through. I am relieved. I'm satisfied that the Court of Appeals did their job. They looked at this case carefully, and I think they came to the right result.
All along, you argued that you were representing a client legally and that your conduct as an attorney should not be criminalized. Can you talk a little bit more about that argument?
Sure. I maintained my innocence from the very beginning. And my position was simply this, that as an attorney, you should be allowed to give legal advice to a client and use your best judgment in giving that legal advice. And it is simply improper for a prosecutor to claim that your legal advice is simply wrong and that you should go to trial and be convicted based solely on that legal advice. The Fifth District Court of Appeals agreed with me, and they found that my role, as I had said from the beginning, was solely that as an attorney representing and advocating for my client, that I received no money except for my legal fees, and that you simply cannot convict an attorney by claiming his legal advice is wrong.
Mitch Stone, this gets to a lot of legal issues, one being the role of an attorney, another being what constitutes gambling in Florida, what's considered legal gambling, and what isn't. It was certainly an education for all of us when this all happened a few years ago.
And it was. It was an education for me, too, because it was the first time that I had addressed this issue. And what I can say is that Kelly Mathis had done an amazing amount of research and analysis legally to determine what Allied Veterans business was conducting. And it was considered a sweepstakes, game promotion, not gambling, and we had expert testimony that dealt with the issue of the software that was being run and how things were being portrayed on the screens. There was First Amendment issues, there was legal issues, all kinds of issues, and Kelly spent months researching this and then provided a legal opinion to his client indicating if you follow these rules, then you can legally conduct a sweepstakes the way you're anticipating doing it, but you have to follow the rules. And he was with them, advising them along the way to make sure they were doing things legally. The government flipped that on its head and said that he was advising them to do it illegally and that there was no such thing as a sweepstakes or game promotion in this instance. So it was a real education for everybody.
Now, Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi may retry you.
Yes,
you may go through this whole ordeal again. Are you prepared for that? And do you think that's a possibility?
I think it's a likelihood. This case has never been about justice, in my opinion. I think they were out to get me from the beginning.
And why?
And I don't know.
And why do you think that is?
Well, there are a number of issues. I clashed pretty directly with the sheriff in Seminole County. I think it became a personal vendetta. I think it became about politics. It became about money. And I think they needed to try to prevail against my client, and their best chance of doing that was to put me in jail and arrest me, too.
And when you faced the prospect of prison time, you faced the reality of losing your livelihood and your professional reputation, which one would assume you'd worked very hard to build over a long period of time. Those had to have been some pretty dark moments.
Well, it was difficult. No doubt it was difficult. My faith and my friends got me through. My daughter supported me tremendously, and I was able to get enough strength every day to keep going on. But in the bottom line, I knew and felt that I was absolutely innocent, that I did nothing wrong. And I just kept going and will keep going until I establish that completely.
And you're seeking to have your license to practice law reinstated, is that right?
I am.
Attorney Brian Tannenbaum is calling into the show to talk about that. Mr. Tannenbaum, good morning.
Good morning.
And so Kelly Mathis will seek to be reinstated with the Florida Bar. How does that process work?
Well, he was only suspended as a result of the conviction, and now that the Fifth District has reversed that conviction, the Florida Bar has filed an update with the Supreme Court advising them of this but saying nothing else. So at this point, two things are going to happen. One, either the Supreme Court issues an order asking what our position is on the license and the bar's position, or they do nothing, and when the period for rehearing ends, we file a motion to reinstate his license, but I believe his license should be reinstated because the reason for the suspension no longer exists.
And Kelly Mathis is a former president of the local Jacksonville bar. And so has there ever been a situation like this where someone with this high regard in the legal community has been through an ordeal like this in recent memory, and now you and Mr. Stone and others are trying to repair his professional standing?
Well, you know, there's the old thing that you hear where somebody, you know, is exonerated or their conviction is reversed, and they say, where do I go to get my reputation back? I think Kelly knows he's got a long road, but he's got a lot of friends and supporters out there. Prominent attorneys have been disciplined by the bar, and they have been arrested and charged with crimes, but for justice to occur where a conviction is reversed, it doesn't happen often, so that's why we're kind of waiting to see what the Supreme Court does. But under the case law, they should absolutely give him his license back.
That's Attorney Brian Tannenbaum on the line. Thanks for being with us. Mitch Stone, what can be learned from the Allied Veterans scandal for Florida, going beyond Kelly Mathis's ordeal?
Well, it's interesting because obviously one thing I've learned is that Kelly Mathis was an extremely strong advocate for his client. And I think that that was one of the reasons why he was targeted in this prosecution. He is a business lawyer. He was a litigator. He represented his client as a in all kinds of legal areas, whether it was lobbying with legislators, whether it was filing lawsuits to make a determination of what was legal and what wasn't, or whether it was advising his client about what they could or could not do. And as a result of his advocacy, he was targeted. And it's rare that that happens, but for attorneys out there who have to vigorously defend or represent their client in the best possible way with the most intelligent information, you just got to understand that sometimes you can take the tiger by the tail and end up in a bad position, and that's what happened to Kelly.
Your deal isn't over, as you said, Kelly. Right. Pam Bondi may retry you, but as you look ahead to the next chapter of your life, what are you seeing?
Well, I think I'm finally at a point where I can start planning a future. For 3.5 years, I couldn't plan my future. I couldn't think about my future. You know, the fear, the worst nightmare fear, was that any day I may get the ruling that ruled against me, and I'd be told to show up for prison the next day for 6 years and miss that part of my life and my children's life. So now I can actually start thinking about a future. I'm looking forward to get back to the practice of law. I'm not sure what form that's going to take yet. I'll have to see.
Will you maybe represent clients that have been through the type of ordeal you've been through? Would that be something more to your liking? Or?
Well, you know, I don't know. I can certainly empathize now with someone that claims they've been wrongfully charged and wrongfully convicted. I may have a certain appeal to that type of client, but I'll have to see.
Well, it's a fascinating story, and we appreciate you both being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa.
Attorneys Kelly Mathis and Mitch Stone talking about the coda, sort of, to the long-running Allied Veterans of the World scandal here in Florida. And still to come, the music of the Chris Thomas Band. But up next, the poetry therapy of Hope at Hand. We'll tell you about that. Stay with us.
From the panhandle to the peninsula, the Sunshine State's politics are as hot as the weather. Trump versus Clinton, the race for the U.S. Senate, new political boundaries and familiar issues. Join 89.9 every Friday at 1 p.m. for Decision Florida. Let your voice be heard.
Political analysts put people into certain buckets. Democrats, Republicans, education level, race, also who they like.
I wasn't a fan of Hillary Clinton, but when I realized that that was my only option.
I'm Kai Ryssdal-White with a college degree and voting in North Carolina. That is next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
WJCT is a community-supported station, and your contribution helps programs like our radio reading service for those who are visually impaired or have difficulty handling printed materials. If you'd like to specifically help radio reading, denote that on your check and send it to us at WJCT, 100 Festival Park Avenue, Jacksonville, Florida, 32202. And thanks for helping us give voice to the printed word.
Welcome back to the show. Well, they're a unique organization providing art and poetry therapy to at-risk kids around town. Jacksonville's Hope at Hand uses creativity, language, art, and other therapeutic approaches to help with healing and personal growth to struggling youth with very limited resources. How does this work? Well, Stephanie Fletcher is executive director of Hope at Hand. They'll be featured at an upcoming TEDx event here on October 22nd. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
You came up with the idea of poetry as therapy.
Yes, and I did not make it up, just so you know. there is an organization called the National Association of Poetry Therapy, and I did 440 hours worth of training in Delray Beach, Florida, to be able to provide poetry as a therapeutic outlet.
Specifically to young people?
We work predominantly with young people, yes. We're at we are even in St. Augustine at Betty Griffin House, Pace Center for Girls, Youth Crisis Center. We have incarcerated girls at pretrial detention with felony charges. And we also have girls at DDC incarcerated. We have drug rehab teens in Gateway. We're all over the place, really.
And how does it work? Because people listening might not immediately grasp that this is something that can be used as therapy.
Yes, and you don't have to like poetry, I promise. We meet a lot of people who say they don't like poetry, but really we provide a poem as a medium to get kids talking. And it's very neutral to put something on the table that they can read and discuss, and then we flip it, and then they rewrite it from their perspective.
Oh, wow. And you must get some really incredible poems, I would think.
I brought a couple. Would you like to
hear? Yes, I would.
Okay, here's a quick one. And this is one from an incarcerated girl with felony charges, charged as adult at pretrial detention. It's called Free. If I could be free, that's all it would take. I'd roam this earth to clear all of my mistakes. If I could be free, I'd flow like the wind. I'd set sail on the water, go to sleep, wake up, and start over again. If I could be free, I'd never leave home. But I do realize at this point, the word free is unknown.
What is that girl charged with? What is she facing?
We don't talk to them about any of that. When we go into all of our facilities, we just give them a break from what they're going through, and we just provide hope through poetry, and they get to be a kid again. They don't have to worry about what they've done or the mistakes they've made. We know where they are, so we kind of have a gist of what their background might be, but we don't bring anything like that up. We're looking forward, and we use poetry to get them to consider choice and change, because most of them have made bad choices. Some are in poverty and some are vulnerable, but a lot of them have made bad choices, so they get to let that go when they're with us.
And what sort of effect do you see it having on them?
It is different for each child. Sometimes we only see them for one session. So if we go into the jail or we go into drug rehab, they may not be there the next time we see them. And we do hear stories. They look us up on Facebook and message us. So sometimes I've met some of the girls from jail. Actually, the one I just read gained some weight when she got out, and she messaged me on Facebook and said, "I'm cold. Can you please help me get some sweaters? It was wintertime." So I met her and picked her up and took her shopping and then took her back and fed her and then never saw her again. So sometimes they just disappear. Most of the time they disappear, really.
That's too bad. But you're going to continue working with these populations, and you're also going to be part of an upcoming TEDx event in Jacksonville on October 22nd. Tell us about that.
Well, TEDx has offered to distribute our poems. So somewhere during the day, they have made, I think, about 700 copies of some of our poems, and they've rolled them up in little scrolls and tied them with a ribbon, and they'll be distributing the words and the voices of these kids that we work with.
Where can people read more of the poems that you're getting through your work?
Our Facebook page is really the best place because we're able to add things easier than on the website. We're kind of paper and pencil people, not technology people. So
I would think even writing the poems down by hand is also another form of therapy.
There's a lot of research in many different ways that supports what we're doing. Getting it out of the body is very important, and putting it on paper gives you that historical perspective. So absolutely.
It's so good to talk to you, and thanks for being with us.
Do we have time for one more?
Absolutely.
Okay, this one is called I Am From, and this is a girl from Portside Mobile Home Park. I am from spending sleepless nights sharing a room with my sister and laughing until mom came in with curlers and a frown. From spending countless days wearing the same princess dress, demanding someone crown me. I am from Barbie towers and pretend weddings, from nightmares and monsters I swear still creep up on me. I am from learning that a car door open while the car is moving results in harm, and a ticket to the back seat where the door is always locked. From the old road trips taken every summer as a family. I'm from a family who woke up together on Christmas and enjoyed each other's company, from slamming doors and name-calling. I'm from coming home from school and realizing she was gone and finishing my homework in tears, from knowing I'll see her again someday. I'm from cuts and scars and knowing I can affect my future. I am from dark, yet light passes and will always try to shine a light for a brighter future.
Stephanie Fletcher, you're doing wonderful work. Thanks for sharing those poems.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Stephanie Fletcher is executive director of Jacksonville's Hope at Hand, poetry therapy for kids. And in a moment, the music of the Chris Thomas Band. That's next.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, there are 5,000 U.S. troops in Iraq. Some are on the front lines in the battle to retake Mosul from the Islamic State in what could be a grueling campaign. Where and how U.S. troops are deployed in the fight against Islamist insurgencies. At 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Hi, I'm John Braun. I'm an emergency planner for the city of Jacksonville, Florida. Individuals with special needs should register annually for assistance with evacuation to shelters. Visit jacksready.com for more information and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
This segment is brought to you by Colo CSX Data Center Hosting Solutions.
When he was 18 months old, Phoenix Avalon latched onto a violin.
I held it upside down and rocked back and forth for a half hour.
and I asked if I could play the violin because I didn't know how to pronounce a V.
Phoenix Avalon is now 16 years old and plays the violin really well. We'll meet him on the next Performance Today from APM. Weeknights at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, they're one of the most popular local groups around the First Coast, the Chris Thomas Band, led by the charismatic Thomas. It's an exciting show, entertainment in the mold of the Rat Pack era. Take a listen.
Okay, you win. What are you waiting for? Well, all right, baby, okay. Honey, you win. Girl, I'm in love with you. If I'm gonna be your man, pretty baby, let me hold your head. Yeah, all right, okay, you win. What are you waiting for? But all right, baby, baby, okay, you win.
If you're up for a swinging good time, guess what? The Chris Thomas Band has a new CD coming out this month and two big shows this weekend.
Right.
We've got a preview. Chris Thomas, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa Ross.
And we're going to have a little hey-hey, as Frank Sinatra might have said. A little ring-a-ding-ding on the show,
which I'm
so excited about. Yeah, I am such a fan of your music.
Thank you.
You're gaining such a following around Florida. Congratulations, first of all.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That means a lot. And yes, you said it best. The fans have been amazing and just how they come to the shows and support us. And without them, it's not, we don't exist.
Now, you have taken a really traditional format, a big band with a lot of instruments,
right,
and you've modernized it. How did you crack that code and come up with a live show that would work for multiple generations, I think, of music fans?
Yeah, there are two artists in particular. One just for his current swag and bringing current Michael Bublé for what he does in the show. I've been to every show he's done here in Jacksonville. And then Postmodern Jukebox, who was just here Sunday. And just their whole idea and take on taking current songs and reformatting them to a 30s or 40s type of swing and feel. But then staying true to the roots of the Great American Songbook.
Yeah.
And just merging them. And, you know, my voice is more of a soulful take, more of an old soul, northern soul from like the 60s. And so just staying true to myself in that way as an artist. But I love the Sinatra, Davis, Dean Martin. I'm an addict. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's so much fun.
Oh, it's a blast.
And you're a really charismatic front man, which is so important. Mm-hmm. But you are backed by an incredible band. How many pieces are in your band?
We go up in total 19.
19?
Yeah. Yeah, so our horn section can go, it's 13 traditionally. We do a once a month big band show, but we can go up to 14 if we put in a fifth trumpet. So it's, and I'm blessed. I mean, all these guys have, music has been their education. So Jacksonville University, University of North Florida, both those programs are highly represented. But we have Florida State University, United States Army, United States Navy, so which are amazing bands within their own right. So just blessed, man. I'm really, yeah.
You're on fortunate. A roll, Chris Thomas, and you've got a new CD out. It's called "It's Only the Beginning."
Right.
Great title. This is you are expanding, hopefully beyond Jacksonville, and continuing to grow as a band. Now, people have a couple of opportunities to come to your release party for this CD. Tell us about them.
Thursday night, tomorrow night, Cass Marina. We'll be there 7 to 10. Our front side, or what we call the pit in front of the band, the $20 ticket's gone. We sold out. We have probably about 15 $15 seats, which is more beachside. And then general admission is 10. So those are all night long. And we're doing a pre and post party as well. So this will give those who have bought the reserve ticket, 20 and or 15 on that show, can come before the gig and for the show. Meet me. We're going to have t-shirts, CDs available, take pictures and autograph and all that. And then Friday night, we're doing the same show again at Unity Plaza, 220 Riverside, Brooklyn. And that's really unique. Hobnob is partnered with us in that they're providing, I think we have 60 seats in total that are available. I think right now we're left with a little bit less than 30. Those are a $20 ticket.
Yeah, you're almost sold out?
Yep. Well, almost, yeah. And then that show, other than the reserve tickets, it's free. So we're really hoping that the Riverside Avondale San Marco will come out and just enjoy themselves, have a great time. The weather's going to be gorgeous.
Well, that's I think the magic of the Chris Thomas Band is your shows are just pure fun. People Thanks. Have a good time.
That's the goal.
Absolutely. Yeah. So congratulations on the
Thank
new
you.
CD
Thanks
and all
so
the
much.
Success and sharing the music with us.
You bet. Thank you.
It's Thanks. A new CD by the Chris Thomas Band. It's only the beginning. Come check them out Thursday night at Casa Marina, Friday night at Unity Plaza. We're going to close with a little more music, and that is our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Kevin Mershart produces the show. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Diane Rehm is up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Enjoy the music and have a great day.
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic boots, there's a bar in East LA. Come on, fly with me, let's fly away. Come on, fly with me, let's float down to Peru. Yeah, and there's a big boy band in there too. For you, come on, fly with me. Let's go up in the blue. Once I get you up there where the air is rougher, darling, we're gonna glide starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, how building you are so near that you might hear all the angels. Cause we're together, weather-wise, it's such a lovely day. Just say those words and they'll beat those birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's too perfect for a flying honeymoon, they say. Come on, fly with me, let's fly away. Pack up, come on, let's hurry.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.